is a mother that had reached out with a 14-year-old child that was literally suicidal until she saw a Dapper Boy video ad and felt like she belonged on this earth. And the mother was thanking us that we existed. And so we always remember our why and that we're changing people's lives. Yeah. So our biggest concern when doing these pre-order launches was creating urgency with our customers. So it was like a combination of FOMO, urgency, and loyalty. So what we would do is, let's say, you know, bringing it to 2021 now is like our best year. Yeah. Shark Tank was 2022. Yeah, it was an intense one. So this is where actually things get a little bit crazy. And this is super vulnerable times here that we experience.
So on today's episode, you're going to hear about an incredible story about this gender inclusive brand called Dapper Boy. It's a great episode. You don't want to miss it. Do stay tuned.
Hosted by Kunlei Campbell.
So welcome to the 2X e-commerce podcast show. I'm your host, Kunlei Campbell, and this is a podcast dedicated to rapid growth in online retail. Today's interview is one I have with Vicky Pache. She is the founder of an all gender inclusive apparel brand called Dapper Boy. She has a phenomenal story, I have to say. She went through personal challenges finding essentially clothes that would suit her, and she had pain points, and she decided to solve the problem rather than complain. She solved the problem by actually starting this apparel brand. She started out from a Kickstarter campaign, and that went well, and she used the traction on there to go D2C. She didn't want to sort of use the Kickstarter campaign over and over again. She went D2C, which is direct to consumer, for people who don't know. So she went direct to consumer, and she then used pre-sales strategy and the direct to consumer model to essentially sell more. But the core thing you're going to learn from this episode is the use of community. So from the get-go, she'd been tapping into the LGBT community, and she was able to essentially use that to grow the brand. And my takeaway essentially, and I said this in the interview, is more or less, if you're struggling now, you need to find one community initially that will essentially align and resonate with your brand values, and essentially use that to build and cohesion your community, because you build community from community. And that's what she did. So she built this Dapper Boy community of people who were like extra patient and loving of the brand. They were waiting 6 to 8, 9 weeks for products to actually ship through the, you know, pre-order model. So with all of that, she's been able to build it. We also talk about investments. She's used the various investment platforms. She's been on Shark Tank for her brand. And now she has, and she's going through a round now, an investment round, a fundraising round. She has a lead investor. It's an interesting, you know, who's had like a bootstrapping mindset to actually build in something bigger than her, using investors to really scale this up further. So why should you listen to this podcast? Why I think you should listen to this podcast is you're going to learn about community building. You're going to learn about how to use pre-sale strategy to essentially grow your brand. And you're going to learn about networking towards capital raising should you need it in the future. So brace yourself, enjoy this episode. But before I let you go, if you're listening to this on any platform, whatever, whatsoever, there must be a follow button. Hit that follow button to essentially increase our reach so more people listen to this podcast and I'm able to bring much bigger and bigger guests on this podcast. So I shall leave you for now. It's a great episode. She's very affable, and the journey and story in of itself was really impressed me. So enjoy, folks. And yeah, catch you on the other side. Hey, Vicky, welcome to the 2X e-commerce podcast. I've been looking forward to hearing about the Dapper Boy story for weeks because, yeah, it was scheduled weeks before. So it's a warm welcome.
Thank you so much. I am so excited truly to be here.
Fantastic. So yours is a very incredible story. You've gone through peaks and troughs. And I would very much like to hear from the horse's mouth. Some people heard about your story in the intro, but I think, you know, you telling the story now, your story thus far would be great to hear.
Yeah, sure. So Dapper Boy started back in 2015. It was due to my own personal journey shopping in the men's department. Prior to that, my whole life, it's just so funny because if you were to ask my friends from high school if Vicky would ever start a fashion brand, they would probably just be beside themselves because I hated shopping. Shopping in the women's department, my whole life was a terrible experience. I never loved those styles. I always felt frumpy, unseen, not confident. And it wasn't until I moved out. I'm from upstate New York originally, moved to San Diego after college. And I was looking for anything in marketing in particular. And I got a job at a casino and moved my way up through the company quickly, where I had to wear suits at one point. And again, it was just not the vibe for me. I like came out of the closet and eventually chopped my hair, I was ready to shop in the men's department. But again, I remember the very first time I tried on a pair of men's jeans. Actually, it was the very first product I tried on. It was everything to me. It was exactly what I wanted it to be. It was that confidence. But I realized down the line that the men's clothing really just never fit my body in the first place. So that was in that time frame. Again, I cared so much about my look, my feel, like all of that. And I was going out with confidence and dating and being out in this world. And it was exciting times, but those clothes never fit my body. And years later, 2014, actually, is when I decided to do something about it. My wife and I were talking about the ill-fitting suits, and we were going to start a suit company, believe it or not. Our very first logo has a bow tie in it. But shortly after, there was other lesbian-owned companies coming out at that time with suits. And I realized I did not want to compete with them at that time. And I remember my very first product, which was jeans. And that's how we began. We launched a Kickstarter campaign with jeans.
Okay. There's a lot to unpick from there. Yeah. First of all, why did you leave New York for San Diego? Why? Let me ask from there.
Sure. Yeah. So I went to school up in Flaxbridge State University in New York. And us upstaters were very scared of New York City. And so I knew I didn't want to stay in upstate. I was too nervous to go to the city. I had family in San Diego and we would always visit almost once a year. And so my aunt and uncle were like, come out here for just the summer, take your time, and then you can go back to New York and start your career. And I never left. I just love San Diego so much.
It is what it is. Okay, so now let's fast forward to the Kickstarter campaign. It takes a lot of skill. Was it successful, your first Kickstarter campaign?
Our goal was to raise $18,000, and we ended up surpassing it, raising $26,000.
Okay, let's break down how in the Kickstarter campaign. Did you lean on any help? Did you do it yourself? What was the video? What was the story? What was the ask? And how did you, because that's where you started building community, I can imagine.
Yep, that was the very beginning. That was a pivotal time. So again, having the fashion background, we literally had two samples to work with. And we, backtracking a little bit further than that, is how do you find a manufacturer when you have no fashion background? And so we had been hung up on, I can't even tell you how many times people were like, you don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I have this idea of literally blending the two worlds of men's and women's clothing here. Women's clothing is not functional. They don't have deep pockets. Like still today, it's crazy that it's revolutionary to have deep pockets. So those are the things. When finally one manufacturer that we reached out to was like, I think you guys are onto something, hooked us up with their pattern maker. And we went through 6 months of samples. We had all of our friends in these two sizes try them on and until they were perfect. And then we were off to the races. So when it came to Kickstarter in particular, we did a lot of research online. And I know that there was one article in particular is by Tim Ferriss on how to launch, I think it was like $100,000 on a Kickstarter. And so I took a lot of those pieces of just like being viral in the smallest way. But we had originally, before even launching the campaign, just pumping it up to friends and family first. and then eventually to our community, just locally here in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We would utilize the models that were trying on our stuff. We had built the list. We had gone on Twitter and found anybody writing articles about gender neutral fashion in particular and just hitting them up, hey, we're launching. And actually one thing that really helped, and this was huge for us, is we did almost this like flash mob post. And so before launching the campaign, we had at least 100 people sign up that they would go ahead and write a pre-written post that we had written with a video and just say, hey, on this date, at this time, we're all going to launch it at the same exact time. And we were getting traction quickly. Imagine not having this, knowing this world at all and doing raising 10 grand within 10 days. So we were like getting excited that this is really going to happen for us. So that was the beginning.
That's incredible. So the money comes in. Now you need to deliver the goods. How did you fare with that, with the delivery, and how long did it take?
I will never forget this time frame. So we had, again, my wife and I started this brand and she was working full time. I was at this point doing casino consulting as a side gig. And so I was like still traveling to casinos and being essentially a branch of their marketing team. And we had moved from a 4-bedroom townhouse to this 1-bedroom, 630 square foot shack just to make this dream happen here because we were all in. And I remember getting the first batch of jeans and not knowing what I didn't know and like literally having 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper and cutting out these labels. And taping them on and all of that, going down these staircase, going to the PS store to ship off these huge boxes, which were heavy. I, again, didn't know. And the thing was, is we had sold out of that production. It was like 300 pairs of jeans is what we were going for. But I should have raised more because once we were out, what we were going to do next? We were out of capital. We had to figure out how to stay afloat. So 1 year had gone by and we're like, should we even do this anymore? What's going to happen next? What a lot of people actually don't know is we were also working on our very first button up the same time we were launching jeans. And what's really unique about that is that we had these hidden snaps, which is like it's our thing here, is having these hidden snaps behind the chest placket to prevent chest gap, which is such a huge thing. And so we were like, okay, I think this is going to be a noisemaker product. We want to invest in more jeans. How do we continue on? Do we launch another Kickstarter campaign? As much as we loved that being able to do that, we didn't want to do that process again with the reward and stuff like that. We wanted to move everything to our own website. So what we end up doing is moving all to our Shopify store. And what we would do is, and this is how we've been doing it, bootstrap this brand for years, is we would, again, samples. This very first button-up shirt was the first product that we launched on our Shopify store. We would do a photo shoot, again, with our friends, just on our iPhones, put out these videos that immediately hit the problem. Do you ever have this problem? And it's showing that chest gap. What about this? Where that product, I used to wear my button-ups down to my chest and leave it open like it was a style because it couldn't fit around my butt. This is a big problem. It was a problem for so many people. So we were really hitting people with the problem just to start, just to resonate with us. And then I think we just had this likability too. We're not pushing any kind of political agenda. We're just people having fun, being confident together. And people were just sharing it like crazy. So this video, this one video, this button up was going viral back then. It was like hundreds of thousands of views. And we had sold, it was like $30,000 within 3 weeks. And imagine not having any sales for pretty much a year after selling out of jeans. And we were like, okay, this is how we keep going. And because at that time, again, we were going to bank saying, hey, we were looking for capital and we were getting denied. We don't have enough sales. So we were like, okay, this is how we have to get crafty and continue bootstrapping the brand. At this point, we were just getting different colors with colorways with jeans and for these button-ups and just launching every month or every other month at this point and just constantly selling out until at one point, 2021, now fast forward, we were launching every week new products and constantly just selling out.
So you just rolled it over product by product, knowing what works. Question on the viral video. What handle did you share it from? Was it your personal handle or the official Dapper Boy? And was Dapper Boy then? Was it known as Dapper Boy then? Or did you have to change your brand name eventually?
It was always Dapper Boy, always Dapper Boy. And we always shared it from Dapper Boy. And of course, we would still do that same kind of that flash mob model again in the very early launches of being like friends and family. And now all the Kickstarter community members, like you're part of something huge here. Please share these posts. So we were constantly. And I think for us too, is we were not shy to be in people's faces. I know in the beginning, I hear this from a lot of early founders is, oh, I don't want to email too much or hit people too much. But we were just not afraid of that. We were constantly out there, constantly posting, constantly emailing people.
Yeah. What I've picked up from what you said thus far is it's intrinsic in your DNA to be very community first as a brand. And you've done it from day naught, from day zero. Even when you're the flash mob thing, you still tapped into the San Diego community to help you, family and friends, community, that core. There's always that core in community, and then it's so expand. And you've just continuously focused on that. It reminds me of Gymshark. When Gymshark's and still now, they were focused on essentially strength and so bodybuilders and power lifters, the communities, and because they had their attention through the other influencers in there, they're not afraid to keep posting and keep emailing. And I see parallels here. So within, how would you describe your community? What's a typical avatar of the Dapper Boy community?
Yeah, so these women were coming to us with the same exact problem with the chest gap and all that too. And at that time, we were marketing as an androgynous clothing brand. But really, things were starting to change quickly with all these different customers coming to us relating to the problem. So we've really morphed from gender neutral to all gender, because our goal is to be this mainstream brand. And it's important to do that. It's important to be seen and to feel like you belong. And I think in particular, and it even is today, is that I think men in general are not used to hearing things like inclusive. I think the word gender can be very triggering for people. We've really morphed consistently here throughout the years, androgynous to gender neutral to genderless to non-binary. But I think also, I don't know if the world is ready for that. I think they automatically assume the words non-binary are immediately LGBTQ community, and some people are just not ready for that. We've moved to all gender to be truly welcoming for all people. And again, it's about belonging. It's not even about fitting in. And we have customers, again, we've had parents reach out to us. And one particular story I share all the time is a mother that had reached out with a 14-year-old child that was literally suicidal, until she saw a Dapper Boy video ad and felt like she belonged on this earth. And the mother was thanking us that we existed. And so like, we always remember our why and that we're changing people's lives. They're able to get jobs they never thought they could get because of this newfound confidence that they actually belong.
That meaning and why is so fundamental in longevity of a brand. And those anecdotes or stories of the brand being very intrinsic in the growth of your customers' lives, it's what will get you up in the morning every day, despite the days being bad or good or ugly. You will turn up because you're helping. So super, super interesting stuff here. So how did you continue? Could you explain the product launch process? So you explained the first one, the jeans, the topless. In fact, with the topless, just for people who are not aware, when you talk about the bust, the shirt issue, it's really because females have a bust and many shirts for men are designed for a chest, for a standard chest. And so it just opens up, particularly the buttons. Am I right in saying that? Or
yes, definitely. Okay. We found it with men though too, that have a broad chest. It just automatically just spreads in that region. Stretches. There's this big open space, like Superman ready to just rip it off. Yeah, it's a game changer, those snaps.
Yeah, especially when you're a medium size. And when you're medium, but you're large at the top.
Yes. 100%.
Okay, so how did you go about the product launches? Because now, I don't know how many SKUs you have. You have a ton of SKUs. What was the methodology? Surely there must have been eventually a system and process towards like launching products.
Yeah. So our biggest concern when doing these pre-order launches was creating urgency with our customers. So it was like a combination of FOMO, urgency, and loyalty. So what we would do is, let's say bringing it to 2021 now, it was like our best year. I think we did $1.2 million. And we had I remember our best month being 185K. And we launched 4 different products that week, but each week was like 3 to 5 different colorways. And so what we would do is, one, let's say it's 4 different button-up shirts, different colors. We would say, hey, everybody, we have only 300 in each color. We're going to offer it at up to 30% off. And you have 3 weeks only to get in on this price. And we would sell out because, again, people knew that they couldn't find a fit like this. They knew that we were always selling out of products. And so they would get in on the campaign that first day. So we would launch to VIP customers the day before everybody else. Then there's a general launch. Typically, VIPs was Thursday and general was Friday. And then we would constantly be reminding people, hey, we're counting down. Okay, there's 2 weeks left, 1 week left. So it was just it's like a focused effort on each one of those products. And then when we would launch like the following week, we would say, okay, let's do jeans. So it was always a complimentary like look, like this buildup of this like perfect outfit by the end of the month. But again, like that FOMO was real and people were getting in on it. And that's how we would sell out. But again, like during this time, production is not a quick thing. So it wasn't ideal for us to do this forever. It was just a way for us to prove our products. And it was like research, like what products worked. And we had built this everyday lines. It wasn't just jeans and button-ups. It's swimwear. It's t-shirts. A simple t-shirt is one of our best-selling products because of the fit. It's all of this complete everyday line. So we were always launching almost like a complete look every single month. And yeah, creating
FOMO. With a pre-sale, how do you manage the expectations of product delivery? Because you're just about to put it into production when you get the cash.
Yep. So we would just put an estimated timeline on the product page itself. And okay. So people would know, okay, this is estimated delivery. And in the beginning, for a while, it was 6 to 10 weeks. And again, not ideal for us because with that means we were paying air to get the productions here, which it can hurt some margins in that way. But the goal was to get ahead with fundraising efforts and to get ahead of inventory so that we can save in that way too. But yeah, we would clearly communicate estimated delivery.
Okay. And then whichever sells fastest, you then have it in stock for longer term, I presume.
Yep. And then sometimes we would invest in advance. We knew that like chino pants is a top seller. So whenever we had the cash availability, we'd be like, okay, let's go ahead and order like an extra 300 of these. And that would even sell fastest because people were just like, okay, they're shipping immediately. Like, I better get in on it now. In an Amazon Prime delivery kind of world, I was shocked that people were still getting in on every campaign, knowing that there was a couple months they'd have to wait for the product, but they were willing to do.
Interesting. Super interesting. Did you use like invoice financing providers to serve shore up capital to invest in inventory? Or was it just bootstrap 100%?
It was bootstrap and it was like Shopify Capital had offered us money as well as PayPal Capital. So we were relying heavily on those as well.
Got it. And then with fashion, I was actually speaking to someone yesterday who's looking to launch a fashion brand. And with fashion, the complexities of size, color, that variation, the various combinations of size and color, how accurately demand forecasting on what sizes to launch, or because of the pre-sale, I guess they're just selecting the sizes that smart anyway. Yeah, with a pre-sale, yeah. How did it work?
And for us, it was so important to be size inclusive. I'm a plus size person. And so when we were first launching the jeans, the typical like base model was way smaller than me. So actually why we're able to pull off such a large size ring is because I'm actually the middle base model. And so that helped in the development process of that. But yes, it was the pre-order campaign and that was able, you know, to dictate what our purchase orders were going to be. And so, of course, the largest size, we could even order maybe only 10 and the smallest size too. So we're able to gauge that with these pre-orders.
Okay. And then that minimizes wasted.
Such a large.
And returns. What about standardization? Because if you go to one store, one brand, sizing is different. So how did you sort of, in order to reduce returns and exchanges, How did you get that accuracy in sizing?
Yeah, for us, it was because I 100% agree, especially when it comes to women sizing, it's all over the place. To be a double zero, it doesn't make any sense to me. But we actually felt like the men's sizing was more accurate. And so we were just putting out videos of like how to measure yourself, and it's whatever your waist size is would be your size. And then eventually we got some pretty incredible apps. Our return rate right now is decent still. I think we're at 11%. Right now with returns still, which is always a work in progress. We're always striving to be better. For what we're offering here, I think it's a pretty healthy range.
It's fashion. It's fashion. It's healthy for fashion for sure. I think the standard for fashion by 18, but yeah, I might be wrong. Let's take a short pause to hear from our sponsors and we'll be right back. Hey, e-commerce trailblazers, ready for a game changer in your podcast lineup? I've got just the thing. Tread Secrets, a new podcast that's all about giving you the operational edge in e-commerce. Let's cut straight to the chase. Unlike most e-commerce podcasts that dwell on marketing and growth stories, Tread Secrets dives deep into the operational heart of e-commerce. This is where the real magic happens. Why tune in? Because Tread Secrets brings you the nuts and bolts of e-commerce success. We're talking the nitty-gritty of inventory hacks, cash flow management, sales strategies, supply chain intricacies, product sourcing secrets, and the ins and outs of financing. It's the operational wisdom you need to keep your business not just running, but thriving. Hosted by Peter Beckman, CEO of Tread, this podcast is a treasure trove of insights from industry experts and successful e-commerce practitioners. It's like having a roundtable of mentors, each sharing their best kept operational secrets. Don't let this opportunity slip through your fingers. Search for Tread Secrets on your favorite podcast app or visit tread.io/podcast. That's TREYD.io/podcast. Hit the subscribe button and stay ahead of the dynamic world of e-commerce. Remember, it's TREYD Secrets, the podcast where e-commerce operations meet success. Tune in now and transform the way you do business. You start this, what do you think was the next significant milestone in Dapper Boy's journey? I know now your capital raising, which we're going to talk about, but between those successful launches, the pre-launch of products, building the community, how do you think you gained some unfair advantage, competitive advantage? What was that event?
Yeah, I think there's two things here. And the first thing I'm thinking is when we did an equity crowdfunding campaign. So we did Start Engine back, it was like over 2019 to 2020. And we definitely got a lot of eyes on that, on us. And we didn't have a PR team at that point, but we were definitely, you know, getting crafty ourselves and getting a lot of media exposure. I mean, we were on Forbes, Entrepreneur, and it was really our own efforts. Again, like utilizing Twitter, finding writers, things like that. And so there was a lot of PR happening at the same time as us raising our campaign. And so during that time when we raised, it was a $284,000. And it was over 500 investors, and it was anywhere from 200 to even 5,000 in investment we were receiving, and it was all customers. And so again, it was that viral stuff that was happening at the same time, but it was just a different level than Kickstarter. We were already an established brand within our community, and so it was just constant like PR slash this equity crowdfunding, which was just generating more and more exposure to us. And that's where we come to 2021, the best year we had at that point. And what's interesting at this time frame too is from a fundraising standpoint, vulnerable here, but I didn't know that only 1.7% of women-owned businesses generate over $1 million in sales a year. And I thought at this time that I didn't know this stat, that I had to keep my head buried. And we just had to work really hard. Again, it was me, my wife, and two part-time employees doing all of this ourselves and hitting over $1 million a year, 2 years in a row, and not realizing that we should have been having these early conversations with investors way early on. Yeah.
Interesting.
I just realized it. Yeah.
No, that is a phenomenal figure. As in, I just wrote it down. 1.7% of women-owned businesses make it beyond the $1 million mark a year. And that needs to change for sure. It needs to change.
Well, definitely. It directly right. correlates with another very terrible number here is that only 2%, less than 2% of women-owned businesses receive venture capital. So of all the venture capital in the world, only 2% is going to women. So we're highly undercapitalized.
Okay.
Just is a direct reflection of that.
Okay, super interesting. This is my first time actually hearing about Start Engine. I'm on their website and I could see it. It's essentially an equity raising platform. So how much equity did you give? From how much? What you raised $284,000 for mm-hmm. what? For what amount of equity?
Yeah, it ended up because Start Engine takes their fees too. So I think it's just under 4% total.
Okay. So you gave 4% of equity in Dapper Boy to in the
yes, yep,
okay.
correct.
Okay. And then there's a lot of leverage on media. And then when did you get on Shark Tank? And what was your journey to Shark Tank?
Yeah, Shark Tank was 2022.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. It was an intense one. So this is where actually things get a little bit crazy, and this is super vulnerable times here that we experience. So again, 2021, top of our game. In this October of 2021 is when we hit that 185K month. Then for us is when the supply chain delays really hit our company. So we had placed all these purchase orders based on those campaigns, and then delays started happening. And what happened was we were selling out of inventory. We didn't have very much to sell at all, actually. And we couldn't ethically launch come 2022 any new campaigns when all of these customers were backed up in campaigns. I mean, we had over 51% repeat customer rate here. 54% of our, sales were coming from email. So these mm-hmm. customers were all like in campaigns waiting for products. So 2022 for us was where we almost lost everything. It's just crazy coming off of this high. And at this point too, okay, we are going to lenders. Nobody was funding us because they saw the big drastic decrease in sales. But we were at this stuck place where we couldn't launch anything new and we didn't have much to sell. So we were just waiting, being transparent with customers, like why their product was delayed. We even ended up selling our home, but again, mentally for us, we had to remember the why and where we were just coming from. And that it simply was for us. And I don't advise everybody to do that, of course, but we had this like loyal group of customers and we were really, our trajectory was high. And so we wanted to wait this out, invest in ourselves. And again, my wife always says this, how could we continue to ask investors for money when we were sitting on this equity? We had to invest in ourselves. So during this time also happened to be when we were going through all these interviews with Shark Tank. And again, we were hoping for that to happen too and be able to go to air to film. And we were going through that process as well as being filmed in this documentary called Show Her the Money. This is all happening at the same time as we were trying to figure out how we were going to survive, but then everyone documenting this very hard time in our lives. It was insanity, I tell you what. There was a lot of breakdowns, a lot of I'm going to hide under a desk today. But luckily, my wife, it's crazy, we're both Leos, August 4th and 5th. But I tend to overthink on some things. And she's, nope, we got to keep going. Let's go. So we were able to like really lean on each other, remember those stories, do some very critical exercises in way we're thinking about our business. We had to let go of some people, outside resources, and we had to raise prices. And we still did over $500,000 in 2022 with literally one product launch.
Scary yes. times. When you're running out of stock, believe me, I've been there. It's scary. It's scary. Yeah, it's because you don't have that many moves to make to play. It's just your stock, essentially, till things start to flow. So how did your supply chain challenges start to ease off at that point in time?
Yeah, it's when we got our first investor, actually. When the productions were actually ready, we couldn't figure out how to pay to get them there. We had burned through everything. And so we were like, what are we going to do? These productions are ready. And I started leaning into actual, like, reaching out to investors and fundraising. And again, not knowing this world and just having to meet someone that I had met years ago. And she was the ultimate connector and actually part of the creator of the film. And I said, hey, we're fundraising right now. This is what we're looking for. And she happened to connect me with the right investor that was aligned with our mission. She had known of Dapper Boy. She's a lesbian woman that's been following us for years, remembers our Kickstarter campaign. And she gave us our very first $250,000investment, which was such a game changer. And this was the same day that we filmed on Shark Tank. The same morning is when we signed off on that safe note.
The energy, yeah, the energy you would have brought to the table. Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So how?
$100.
Damn.
We had $100 left to our name, and we have twin 6-year-olds. And so we were like selling our home and going through that process. And we were like, okay, we have enough gas to get to LA for this filming right now. And luckily our friends and our models were just so supportive and they were there on stage with us. But that morning she had signed off and we were able to get all those productions in and it was, and more inventory. So we were able to start again and people did not leave. Our customers were waiting that entire year for us to launch again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been wild, but it's been amazing ever since and exciting times.
Amazing. The alignment also with your first investor to mm-hmm. be a customer, that is blessing. That's a blessing in of itself because they get yes. you. They know you. They feel you as in their customers. That's truly aligned there. It's phenomenal. That's very interesting. So the capital essentially got it going. How much equity did you give for the 250?
Yeah, so we're raising on a safe note. And actually, this is the same round that we're in right now. So this is 2022 okay. for us. And at that time, it was a $5 million valuation cap here. So she's mm-hmm. invested more, almost $1 million ever since. So she's 20%. Will be a safe note. So, yep.
Which is fair enough. Fair enough. As in, it's a big ship, and where you're going from a size perspective, how you're going to build a brand longer term. And she will potentially bring more investors on board as you continue to hit your milestones. Okay. Tell us about the Shark Tank. I haven't watched the Shark Tank video. Mm-hmm. But I'll link to it in the show notes, actually, because it will be somewhere online. I'll actually put it on our website. But how did that go?
That was a crazy process. It's exactly what on TV. It's that long haul. And my wife and I holding hands, which was also so cool to be able to see, again, an LGBTQ brand. Like, we're walking hand in hand, walking up to that stage. Mm-hmm. And we were in the tank, actually, for quite some time. There's some heavy editing, of course. There's a lot of founders that are going up and pitching there. But overall, actually, sharks were very kind to us. And it shows Damon at the end, him giving us his number to be a mentor for us. That's what we were hoping for, is because we felt like he would get it the most because of FUBU. It's a mm-hmm. very niche, a unique audience. But I think where the miss was is it's almost, again, there's so many lessons learned along this whole entrepreneur journey. And this one is one of them. You know, I wish it wasn't so focused on the production, on the selling our home, on all of that, because like our stats are incredible. And I wish there was just more on that. And I think where there was a misunderstanding between the two, and I take accountability for this, is we're not trying to create a third category. And I think that's where the misconception is or was with them, is that they thought we were almost too niche and that we weren't going to be big. And our whole purpose, mm-hmm. like, we see ourselves as the next Levi's of all gender fashion. It's that mm-hmm. staple brand you always think about. And I think for us, the third category is a big no for me. And it's because I don't think people are ready for that. I don't think mainstream is ready for that. I think that automatically we saw that with, there's a brand called Tomboy X, and they were in the Pride section during the month of June. And that's not what we're looking to be. This is not about being gay. It's about mm-hmm. body type and style preference. And that is it. So like the question is, okay, Vicky, where would Dapper Boy go in a department store when you're thinking about Macy's or something like that? And I'm asked this question all the time. And I think that I have a couple of answers for this. Are they ready? I don't know. And I don't think so quite today. And that's why I'm focusing all efforts on direct to consumer or coming up with like virtual reality fittings and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's the end for that. I think that the best way to do it is in baby steps and having Dapper Boy in both sections for now. And it's because we want men and people to be open to this thought. So instead, maybe it's, okay, there's a jeans section and the men's section, and they're saying, huh, these are interesting. I've never really heard inclusive and stuff like that, but I'm going to try it. And wow, these fit great. And maybe they'll look a little bit into the brand and see, oh, this is what all gender is, instead of being so triggering, like LGBT, oh my God. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like yeah. It can be so scary. But I think that's where we start to make change. And that's where we start, not necessarily third category, but maybe it's just based on style preference. And then we start really thinking about the layout of stores and things like that. So
it's a safe space to explore.
My thought process on that.
Speaking as a man, seeing it in a department store, seeing Dapper Boy in a department store in a Macy's is just a safe place for me to explore. I would pick it up, try it in the changing room, try a pair of jeans, try a pair of chinos in the changing room and not feel anyhow. And that's where to start conversations, really.
Yes, I agree with you.
You see stores, do you see yourself opening any flagship stores anytime soon?
I don't think so. I'm really trying because, again, we're very like money conscientious here. So we're trying to keep the low overhead. I'm totally okay. And I'm open to this. We've thought about this before doing like, maybe it's pop-up shops as we're like, mm-hmm. maybe it's like a year long journey where we're just going up and people can meet us in person and do these pop-up shops. It's not in the plan with this particular round of funding. We're being very strategic with every mm-hmm. dollar right now, but that is something I'm definitely mm-hmm. open to. What I am doing though is having these conversations. I've already talked with Macy's, Nordstrom's, Target, Walmart. I'm getting in the faces and saying, hey, I don't know if we're ready to have this chat. I just want you to remember my face. I'm literally saying that exactly yep. verbatim to them, because when we are, that'll be exciting times.
Yeah, yeah, which would be exactly how you got your investor in the first place, in terms of it was years in the making. You met her many years ago, and when the time was right, you had that conversation and it happened. And it happened, yes. Yeah. Good stuff, good stuff. Okay, and with, again, your returning customer rate is insane. It's 51%.
Yes, still.
Which indicates you have very loyal customers. Do you have any loyalty programs or reward programs embedded in your D2C experience?
We do. I think it really came from initially, though, it's those pre-order campaigns, those drops that we were doing, and why that's so high mm-hmm. is people were waiting for it. We also utilize, it's an app called Loyalty Lion, and that's in the background on our Shopify store. So we use that, and actually we're about to launch a very like personalized gift. So like we have the squad is like the base tier, ballers is the second tier, and the highest tier is shot callers. And it's just like fun, personable branding. Again, it's all about confidence. But what we're about to do is mm-hmm. once you hit a certain level, we're sending them a personalized gift that you can't find on the website. It's a hat with the Circle DB logo on it that's just cool, that I wear actually all the time. So it's like a different color for each yep. of the baller and shot caller. And it's post on social about it. It's exclusive. It's again like that feeling. Yeah. So we're always pumping up. People are using their points all the time. So I feel like that's also been essential. But I will say there's a point too where you don't want it to be so high. And we had actually recently reached that. We were actually over even a month ago, yeah, about 2 months ago, where we were 70% repeat customer rate. Mm. And that is not a good thing, because that means we're not reaching new people. And so there is that happy balance. And that is something that, again, as we're fundraising here, the goal is to get ahead of inventory. We think now, again, we're not doing pre-order campaigns anymore, but the magic sauce is going to be keeping those core products in stock all the time. Our jeans, chino pants, those should be in stock all the time. But then doing these limited drops, but shipping immediately, no more pre-orders, and just keeping that like that loyal group waiting for the next cool new drop. Yeah. And so there's got to be this happy medium. And I think that's where we are just going to soar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because as your community expands, the new sets of customers or community members will be less forgiving on like supply chain issues. So once you fundamentally sort out the supply chain issues, you're essentially also increasing dopamine in terms of the reward. So they buy, they get it immediately, it gives them confidence to buy again. So you might actually increase frequency. if they're loving the experience, and with the numbers you have, returning customer rates of 51%, it just indicates there's a lot of product quality. There's high product quality and high utility for your products. So it just means that it's scalable as you continue to acquire more new customers. And so you just need to essentially be in stock. It's an operational challenge.
Yes.
Also, once you get that in place, you're ready to just scale, essentially. So interesting. Super, super interesting.
Yeah, no, I think the goal for us too is we have customers in the UK and Canada, Australia. And So eventually, as we're able to scale within the US, the next goal is to have these same production amounts going to these other countries, utilizing fulfillment centers there. So shipping isn't just so insane. And I think that's how we really scale. And I can't wait to get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're also third party logistics. So just to scale internationally, there are also third-party logistic companies. So I don't know where your production is, but if your production is based in China, you could use services like Portless and it works really well for apparel because it's very easy to ship. So what they do is they use the Shen model in the sense that they pick up inventory, they pick and pack inventory, they put it on airplanes inbound to say the UK, to Canada, wherever, and then they pre-label it with a local carrier in China. So by the time it lands Heathrow Airports in the UK or anywhere in Canada or any international destination, it's going through their postal system, meaning that customers get their goods in 7 to 10 days. And so it's like production to customer in that way. And you don't necessarily need to. And the prices are fairly decent. I had the founder on the podcast, and it was really fascinating. We actually used their service for one of our brands, and it works particularly well for apparel, just due to the fact that it's much lighter to handle. So it takes less cargo space. Yeah, super exciting. So what are your thoughts for the next 24 months, next 2 years? What are your plans for Dapper Boy for the next 2 years?
Yeah, I think us as an operational team, we're looking to expand to some very key team members that we need. I know Charisse and I are still to this day in the weeds doing every part. We're writing the emails, all of that too. So we need some key players to help us expand. I'm reading this book right now, 10X is easier than 2X. And I love that mindset thought of scaling your brand. But I think for us, as for the brand side, we're talking to some pretty exciting players right now, as in we're working with a company called Couture Technologies. And we're so close right now. And it's a virtual fitting. So basically, again, to lower our return rate. But I think people, when it comes to like gender neutral apparel, it is scary. Like you don't know what size you are in particular. It's easier for men to shop on our site than it is for women because they're not used to this kind of sizing. So to be able to see the clothing on your body and actually choose your outfit pieces, you can create your virtual closet and see exactly what that shirt and bottoms are going to look. There's a heat map where you can see where it's like tighter, and it looks so realistic. It's so exciting. But we're just working on very simple fixes here. It's like the stance of the model, is it too feminine or masculine? But this will be the first time that it's going to be a truly genderless experience and not you have to pick a male or a woman. And so that is very exciting. We're hoping to be able to launch that by end of this year. We're very close right now.
What's the name of the app, please?
So it's a company called Couture Technologies. Couture, and so we're partnering together to, it's going to be awesome. And so that'll, again, just create that trust with folks as they're shopping with our brand. But yeah, other than that, we're getting ahead of inventory, getting to our goal here of doing these limited release drops at the same time as scaling our core products. For us too, right now, we're working with this incredible new ad team. We've gone through a lot of different agencies throughout the years here, but we've never had one so strategic right now. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing consistently 4 or 5 times return on ad spend right now with just creatives that we've had. We have so much creative, and that's so key too, but we haven't been able to strategically dive in. And so we're acquiring so many more new customers. And that's how we were able to get that 71% back to that 51% right now. Mm-hmm. And so we're consistently seeing $4,000 days during the week, which is awesome. And as we're scaling, and that's with no new launches. That's just with core products. So imagine, I can't wait to be having those. But yeah, they're called Socialite and they're in Canada.
Okay, all right. Socialite.
I met them at a retail fest. They're amazing.
Okay. We'll link to them in the show notes. That's incredible stuff. Vicky, for people who want to find out, just who've enjoyed it, anyone who's listening till now has enjoyed listening to you. It's been all about you. Where next, how can they follow your journey moving forward from here? I'd like to build your community.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. It's funny, my wife and I recently just started an Instagram because people are wanting to follow us personally in doing this whole brand. And so we really show behind the scenes and as we're even like launching new products, things like that, how we're developing it, all of that. And that's Meet the Pashas on Instagram. So that's, and we're crazy. Doing fun stuff for sure, but it's meet_the_Pashas, P-A-S-C-H-E-S. So that's the behind the scenes. But I would say also, of course, Dapper Boy on Instagram, and that's Dapper and B-O-I. Spelled Dapper Boy.
I'll follow both accounts on my socials now.
Awesome.
Vicky, it's been an absolute pleasure just learning about the journey thus far. Wish you the very best moving forward. And thoroughly enjoy this convo for sure.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Truly a pleasure.
All right, cheers.